Yeah, that's bro. I wonder if people like set up like booby traps with a cat.
I've wondered that myself. Like, I don't want to be, but I know how people in the States are, and I know just how the how
Bro,
degenerate people are in general,
if
right? Like,
Amer if American farmers got paid for the lineage of the cow, there would be roadblocks of beef.
don't give the ranchers in Colorado ideas, because that's exactly what's being talked about with like the wolf reintroduction. They're like, hey, you're killing our cow. Like, can you kill this wolf? It's killing our cows. The state agriculture or the wildlife is just like, nah, mate of a denning mate, not
Wow.
killing the wolf.
Hello and welcome everybody to the American Soccer Analysis Show. I am your host, Kieran, and I'm joined today by Harrison Highlife Crow and Benjamin Benito Suarez Bellman, a lovely nickname provided by one of Ben's childhood friends. We're gonna get right into it today. We've been bantering. We're gonna get right into it. We're gonna talk about El Tráfico, and not the derby, but just the two teams in El Tráfico, LAFC and the LA Galaxy. Both teams have played some pretty interesting games over the last couple weeks. LA had a barn burner versus San Jose, but then dropped a dud versus Austin. LAFC had a big 2-2 draw, I believe, versus New York Red Bull, with some lovely deflections in there. But I think these are two really interesting teams to talk about. Ben, who do you want to talk about first, LAFC or Galaxy?
Ooh, I pick LAFC because I think they're the better team. Let's just sort of jump into it. I mean, just sort of like I think these two teams are sort of interesting counterpoints just because they're both really good in terms of offense. But LAFC at least has been solid defensively in terms of their strategy. You know, they're playing that pragmatic counter game that Chirundolo has instituted ever since he showed up, sort of pivoting away from the possession game that Bod Bradley made them known for in their, expansion years. But I think they're just solid because of that. And we'll talk G plus boot or G plus draft later on, but Dennis Bouanga has just been carrying this team yet again, at least in terms of the goals added stat. I think it's a 0.19 goals added per 96 thus far,
Oof.
which is just ridiculous.
Oof.
So maybe he's not putting them in the net as often as some people would have expected based on last year, but he is still carrying this team. And I think it's going to be enough when you bring in when you oh gosh Giroud. When you bring in Giroud this summer, you have
Big
Kai
Ollie.
Kamara carrying the team, at least from a striker. They finally have a striker. Good old Kai adds another one to his amazing list of teams in MLS. But I think they're going to be solid. Oh, and they are second in expected points in the league thus far. So the numbers like them a lot.
Harrison, I'm curious what you think of this because I know you and I have talked about like the vibes around LAFC before, but I feel like every year I watch LAFC and I'm kind of not impressed. I'm like, they're kind of whatever. And then I pull up the expected goals table, and every year they're either the best, the second best, or the third best team of the league. This year they're the best team of the league by a lot on the expected goal difference table. FBref has them at like 0.74 per 90. Plus 0.74 per 90. Next best is the Whitecaps or Inter Miami at 0.44 and 0.42. That's a big gap. That's a big gap. That gap is like the same as second to like mid table. So what do you see? Why are LAFC doing so well on the expected side? They're a little bit behind their expected goals. Is there anything real to that, do you think?
No, I don't. I think that I do think it's kind of interesting that teams that a counter-attacking team is behind in their expected goals. I do think that that's a conversational piece that maybe we talk about as the season goes on, right?
But we're 3 months into the season. Things are just starting to kind of start to like vibes are starting to match analytical data, right? So we're starting to say, okay, this makes sense. This matches how I feel about this, right? And Dennis Bwanga, like, okay, yeah, he's not beating out his expected goals by huge margins, but the dude is almost throwing up 50% more expected goals per game than what he was doing time before. And on top of that, he's playing out wide a lot more. Yeah, he's going ahead and you know, playing, intermixing, you know, with that number nine position and kind of weaving in and out. But realistically, he's doing a huge amount of the attack, right? Like, there's him and Tillman both. Timothy Tillman's been really great in the midfield. And overall, I'm okay with them not beating their expected goal numbers right now. I know that it's not matching up, but it's kind of like Ben just kind of said, they're such a strong defensive team that they're just kind of turning the game a little bit on their head. I think that the numbers are more real with them than they are with LA Galaxy right now. I think LA Galaxy have a little bit of noise in that signal.
Yeah, we'll get to the Galaxy eventually, but they're like a zero expected goal difference team who's playing much better than that. I expect they're actually quite a bit better than a zero expected goal difference team, but we'll talk about that. My damp towel for LAFC, it's not a wet towel. It's not soaking wet. It's just like a little bit damp. You know, like, you've already jumped in the pool once. You've dried yourself off. You jump back in. You go to dry yourself off again. It's like just a little bit wet.
Half, okay, all right.
Half of LAFC's expected goal difference, a little bit over half, comes from one game. They pumped Nashville 5-0, 4.3 XGD in that game. They're at about 7.5 for the season. So, and they win that game 5-0, so they're like kind of in line for that game. And then I think they have a +2 goal difference, so they're like -3 on the rest of the season from a +3.
Yeah, I mean, like, you take away the LA Galaxy game as well, where they pumped LA Galaxy pretty hard too on the XG meters, right?
Yeah. So if you take out those two games, that's basically their entire expected goal difference.
But that's also 2 out of 10 games, right?
So for sure, it's not 1 out of 20 games or anything like that.
I just being mindful of the context that of the accumulated numbers that we have, right?
Yeah, and I think if you take out that Nashville game, they're like 3.5 expected goal difference in 9 games, which would be still like the fifth or sixth best team in the league.
Yeah, that's still pretty good. It's still a pretty good difference.
For sure. I think one of the things that I have felt about LAFC for a while is that they can be a bit of a feast or famine team, it feels. I feel like sometimes they get into games where, like, they're winning, the other team opens up to get at them, and like 1-0 turns into 4 very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's like an old playbook of like, well, if you defend deep and let LAFC have the ball, they're not super great. But I do think it's very interesting how this team has transformed under Steve Cherundolo, who I was personally very skeptical of. His Las Vegas Lights record was truly horrific. I think he won 2 games in 2 years or something ridiculous. However, I think it's quite interesting that he has turned like an exceptionally possession heavy, like press and possess style Bob Bradley team into a team that has less than 50% of possession in more than half of its matches. Like, they're not a possession team anymore. They are absolutely a counterattacking team now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really interesting place to dive into them, because LAFC have historically been a pretty smart club. And I'm curious if you think there is a deeper reason behind that change, or just it happens to be the personnel they've had, or it happens to be Steve Cherundolo's ideas.
I think it's kind of interesting. I do want to throw something out. In games in the last year and a half that they have been over 55% in possession, they actually are averaging less than a point in those games.
Really?
Wow.
So it kind of brought up because they both, they drew what, Red Bulls and I just
Portland.
And Portland. So, and both games that they were over 50% possession 50, in both of those 50, games.
58 and 61.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, it's something to kind of think about in that most recent rematch. You know, they had a little bit less possession. They still had over 50%, but they still had less possession over the course of the game. And I think it was more isolated situations and context. It's just something that it just kind of comes to mind that I think that they are a much better. I think it's how they built their team. I think it's the ethos. And it's actually something that I had a shower thought today. I want to know, like, on a scale outside of MLS, because I think in MLS, it's a little bit more embraced. How do good teams, are good teams okay with just being a counter-attacking team? I mean, you look at Leicester, right? Leicester won a championship in England, basically being just a counter-attacking team. But since then, I mean, I feel like predominantly, regardless of what league you go to, teams want, I guess Real Madrid has had a little bit of a counter-attacking flavor to them over the, you know, give and take over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. But overall, it just feels like teams, if you have the money and if you're expecting to be a dominant team, you're going to dominate with the ball. And just because you counter doesn't mean you don't dictate. You dictate without the ball, right? And I think that that's what Cherundolo does really well with his teams, is that they dictate without the ball. Everything is on their terms. But I just kind of wonder, how much is this okay? Is this something that outside of MLS, do people look on these teams and say, this is an okay ethos or this is an okay play style? And I'm just kind of curious because you guys follow more globe soccer than I do.
I mean, ish, but I think the European team, that's the best example of what you're talking about, is Atletico. And it makes me think of, like, it's a circumstance thing, because in Europe, you have these ridiculously unequal leagues in terms of talent and also money.
Sure.
Money causes the talent differential, where you have, but you have a big team that's Atletico, who's perennially third fiddle to Barca and Real. So they will always be they have to be pragmatic in the most important moments, because the most important moments will always be the six pointers against those teams every year. Like, if they have a shot of winning a title because they did well enough against the rest of La Liga table, they cannot drop those points. So I feel like that necessity sort of is what determines their strategy in terms of, you know, Diego Simeone's rigid defensiveness, tenacity. You know, those are the attributes that Atletico for the past decade plus has focused on. I don't know if it's a necessity thing for MLS, because MLS is parity. So I think, you know, when everyone talks about the ability for teams to approach their roster differently in this league, whether it's academy, whether, you know, I think it can go the same way too with tactics.
I don't agree. And the reason why, and the only reason why I don't agree with you is because attacking talent is more expensive. Getting guys that can be that 10, that Ricky Puig, getting Ricky Puig at the cost that they got him is amazing. Getting a player like that comes so infrequently. You have to spend, and I don't feel like the finances are there. I think it's easier to be more pragmatic and still spend and be a very excellent team year over year in MLS, rather than to go big, build out this team a la, you know, Chicago and Miami and what they've tried to do. And Chicago's not bad, but they are not a great team.
Well, so are what you're saying then is it's more reliable for LAFC to do this new model than playing with fire the Bob Bradley way?
Because so that's exactly where I'm kind of leading the current. Yeah, thank you. And so I think that it makes a lot of sense when you kind of look at how the rules are changing and how you're looking at this team. Instead of going out and getting that big 1-2 punch, they are building a team from the back forward, right? And kind of building into this and leaning into this ethos of, hey, we're going to counterattack you to death. We're going to dictate the game, but we're going to dictate it on our terms. And this is the most efficient way that we can do that.
Yeah, well, and I think that's sort of where I was going to, because it's not necessarily a financial constraint, because they've
No.
spent money before. This is more of, this is how we want to spend money, because this is what we think is something we can repeat season after
Yeah,
season.
it's sustainable. I mean, you look at how they've collected their midfield since they came into existence. I mean, they were targeting South American, talent that was not cheap, but it wasn't necessarily expensive, right? They weren't going and spending, $6 million, $7 million to get different talented players, right? I mean, they did do that with
I mean, they
Andre
did a bit
Yuska.
with Ryan Rodriguez too,
Right.
right? So
Yeah. But
they
with
had
that,
some, but
they also
they had
spent
Latif
Cam.
Blessing. They had Marc-Anthony Kay. And that was
Absolutely.
when they were at their best, was when
Yeah,
those.
but I will say Latif and Mark Anthony. Like, Latif was a failed winger in Kansas City, and Mark Anthony K came from USL. Like, those were not like huge budget acquisitions. What I will say, one thing that I think a point that is really important to make is, like, we've talked a lot about the relative parity of these leagues and how counterattacking plays into that, where, like, if Real, so like Real Madrid, Harrison, is a really good example, because you talked about how they've had this counterattacking ethos. They've only had a counterattacking ethos in the Champions League, where in the Champions League, they have very much given up the ball and said, like, yeah, we have the most pacey wingers and we have great transition passers, like, have fun. But in the league, they still dominate the ball against almost every single team they play, because there is an inherent inequity in talent where you have, like, yeah, Eibar are not going to come contest possession at the Bernabeu.
Sure.
In MLS, where this is very different, is that, like, yes, there is some inequity there's no inequity. There's some inequality in MLS,
That's a really good phrasing.
but there is way, way less, to a degree that, like, LAFC can go play the worst team in the league and say, have the ball. And the worst team in the league will say, okay, sure. That doesn't really happen in the top European leagues, where, like, if Man City go to Burnley and say, or Burnley or D whatever, go to Sheffield United and say, have the ball, they're going to kick it as far as they can. So I think, and that's where I think we've seen, like, the fastest way to be an average to good team in MLS is to give the other team the ball and defend in a 4-4-2. Like, we saw that with Houston, who went from, like, an also-ran to being, like, a quite good playoff team by adding, like, one really, really good midfield passer and defending 4-4-2 block and letting teams turn themselves over. So I think when we look at LAFC, it's like, yeah, you're one of the best teams in the league, but you can choose to do this because of the way MLS is set up. Ben, you brought up Olly Giroud earlier, so I want to go back to that, because I think that, to me, is one of the most interesting and actually quite perplexing moves, because
Agreed.
we talk about this counterattacking team, and, like, Giroud is not a counterattacking striker. Like, he is a back his butt up into a center back and link play, and, like, he works hard defensively and he tries in transition. He's quite a good transition passer, but he's not running. So I'm curious what you make of that one.
I think it will probably be fine. I think he'll probably be sharing time with Kai, and there'll probably be sort of a bit of change of pace. I think of 2018 France, and Deschamps had France sort of playing this very vanilla style, and I think that might be where we're going with this, because Giroud was not the goal scorer of that tournament. Giroud was occupy the space, let people run around, and I think that's where this LAFC team's going with this. So Giroud might not even hit 10 goals this year, like, probably. I mean, it's only half a
Yeah,
year,
in
so
half a
probably not. But,
season,
like,
yeah.
yeah, might not even hit five. Like, his role might be to soak up two center backs so that Boanga can invert, or Boanga can hit the seam for a cutback for Tillman coming. Like, I don't think that they're going to rely on him for goal scoring that much, and I think that's probably going to be how they approach it with him.
So the reason I go there is because I wonder how much the counterattacking choices, because I think if we compare to last season, like, I think they're significantly less, sorry, significantly more counterattacking this season than last season. And I think part of that is because they don't have a real striker. Like, Kai Kamara's played like 100 minutes.
Kai just got signed. That doesn't really count because it's been Bogush for most of the time.
Well, and this is Bogush is historically a 10.
Yeah.
And they have like that, what's his name? Ordaz, the El Salvadorian kid. Like sometimes he plays up front. I wonder how much the like choice to play so on the break is a, we don't have a striker, so we're not going to try and pin you with one. And I'm curious to see if they slowly shift towards more and more, we're going to control the ball, we're going to use the big holdup guy, and we're going to link play that way. So I'm very curious to see how that changes. But I will say, I think a big criticism of LAFC their first three seasons before they actually won was that they had no other strings to their bow. Like they were just a press and possess team. They couldn't do anything else. They were like the anti-Red Bull, like where they got to the playoffs, but they didn't have another answer. And I think we've seen in the playoffs, heavy possession teams are like not the norm at being successful in the playoffs. It's really like TFC 2017, the Crew, like those are really, LAFC, I guess, are like really the only teams I can think of that were like pretty heavy possession teams to win. But like Atlanta, counterattacking team, the earlier iteration of the Crew, counterattacking team.
Mm-hmm. Portland, I mean, Atlanta didn't, well, wasn't going to make their cup run until Tata completely switched their tactics up and realized that the only way to beat Red Bull was to stop trying to possess the ball and get pressed by them. Yeah. The only way was to invite them forward and then beat them up, beat them on the counter out there at their own game.
And NYCFC, I guess, were a pretty heavy possession team as well.
Yeah.
I always forget that they won the title. Sorry, NYCFC.
That was 2021. It was a weird, that was a weird season. That was a weird run of playoffs.
I mean, they beat Portland in Portland. That in and of itself is a weird, like a misnomer fact, like forgotten. It feels really weird. It feels like a 10 years ago.
I feel like that was the playoffs that killed the single seed elimination for the first round, because you have both one seeds go out immediately with the Revs and Rapids, and MLS goes, can't have this happen again.
No kidding. I still love the best of three series. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Any other LAFC thoughts that are itching at your brain? I think I don't think there's much to say other than they're really good.
I will have one, my own damp towel is that they have a little more interrupting G plus than I'm comfortable with. I think they're like fifth in the league in terms of interrupting G plus four. So that means they're letting teams into their area and breaking up plays pretty reliably. But I'm concerned that if they play too deep and don't make those plays, that might give up a little too much space. That might be something to watch.
I will say, Mr. Bellman, you have had a dozen great points on this. I contend that one. And the reason why I contend that one is because, you know, it's part of their attacking ethos. And and they're I think, in the bottom third right now in the league in progressive passes against inside their attacking, inside their 18. So I think that's kind of what they're set up. I think that naturally they're going to generate more interrupting G plus than what other teams would, just because that time between the attacking third and the actual 18, they have it so compressed. You have so many different defenders in there that's just exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to disrupt and go on the counterattack right there at that spot.
That makes sense.
That would be my one contention with that. And that I just my two cents.
Mm-hmm.
I there is certainly like some of that there. Like they are, if you look at total progressive passes, they are actually like top 10 in most allowed. Like they're like the seventh or eighth, but other pressing teams like the Red Bull are up there. Or I guess the Red Bull are more of a mid block team now, but it's one of those things that I'm not super concerned about that. What I am a smidge like teeniest, all of their defensive metrics, XGA, passes into the box, passes into the final third, touches in the box, whatever you want, are all a little bit worse than they have been historically. They're usually a top five-ish defensive team, and they're like 8 to 10 in all of them. And it's like a small thing. They've played 10 games. They've actually played a reasonably difficult schedule so far. just keeping an eye on it. I'll be curious to see where that goes.
Yeah, and
shout for both of you.
I think the big thing there is no more Chiellini, and there's been sort of some rearranging on the back line without any major reinforcement to replace that name. So I think they're doing okay given that. The thing is will that be good enough when it's a playoff runtime? So will they be stout like they were before? Are they gonna have that lapse? But we'll see.
What I'm hearing is Ryan Hollingshead has a clear path to the MVP. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, we need more fullback MVP candidate, that's for sure.
It's bring back Anton Tinnerholm. All right, Harrison, before we switch over to the other half of LA, do you have a guy for us?
I do have a guy. And not only do I have a guy, I have a sponsor this week. We are sponsored by backheel.com. They're putting together some of the best independent American soccer coverage out there. Obviously, you listen to us, you probably read their material or at least want to. Their subscription services, pretty cheap. You're going to support soccer journalism in America. Like, please go out there, support those guys. Joe Lowry is assembling such a great squad of just not just MLS. I mean, we talk a lot about MLS. We're already talking about like having an episode here, I think, of USL, right? We wanted to have some USL coverage as well this season at some point in time. They have some fantastic articles that I think who is it?
John Morrissey.
Yeah, Morrissey.
John Morrissey's all over USL.
That's the name was just sitting there on the cusp. Thank you, Ben.
Evan Davis dropped end of Bichel on Casey Current's muy rápido attack.
Is correct. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. So go out there, subscribe for full access. They have so many stories. They're going to get. They have more coming this year. It's going to be really great. Mailbag submissions, much, much more. Please, again, go out to backheel.com to subscribe. So this week's that guy, remember that guy. Of course, we talked a lot about Laurent Courtois over the past week. And we got really into managers, right? Like
we did get really into managers.
I dropped something and I think we had a fight. And
yeah, it got deep.
I will say, just before we get into this, I don't really check my phone at work anymore because I work in the middle of the mountains. I don't really have great phone signal and I'm usually busy enough that like, I just don't really have time to check the Slack like I used to. But I opened my phone and I saw 192 Slack messages. And I was like, I got to see what this is. And what I saw was Greg Vanney ranked 11th in the manager pool.
You're anyways, welcome. Continue. You're welcome. We'll get to that in a second. So this guy actually played with Courtois out at Chivas USA.
Laurent Courtois played for Chivas USA. That,
wait, you, what?
You could have given me him as
retired. He retired with the LA Galaxy. How about that? Wow. I bet you did not expect that little LA connection as we went forward, right? Like we're talking.
I had no idea he even played, to be honest.
Yeah, he actually was with West Ham at one point in time. 7 appearances. So there you go. But this player has been with MLS 6 different MLS teams. He is one of 2 of remaining Chivas USA players that are active. Of course, the other one is out there too. I'm not going to reveal that because it'll make it a little bit easier, I think. So there you go. You need more hints?
I know.
2 active Chivas USA.
So I know one of the only active Chivas USA players is Marky Delgado.
So 3. Did he have it? I might have missed.
Yeah,
I might have missed that.
Because he went to TFC. He was picked from Chivas by TFC in the like. Not the like disbanding draft or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
Dispersal draft.
Dispersal. Yep.
I missed
that one.
It's obviously not Marky. Other Chivas USA guys who are still around. Like I would have said Sasha Kleshin, but he's
out. Yeah, he's not. That would have been my guess too. My gosh.
I think we need another hint.
Yeah.
Unlike his counterpart, He is still playing in the United States at a lower level.
Lower level. Okay.
Whoa. Okay. So a longtime MLS guy who's playing in the USL. Interesting. Or like he could be playing like Arena League or something.
I'll give you an even better hit. He put up 62 appearances with the Birmingham Legion.
Ooh, okay.
I got nothing.
I remember seeing a couple big names. Well, is it Juan Agudelo?
It is Juan Agudelo.
Nice.
Birmingham Legion did it for me. I was like, no, I know there's someone playing recently with Legion that I know.
Wow, Juan Agudelo.
That's
a name I have not thought about in a long time.
He's currently playing with San Antonio. He is yet to make appearance this year. He is on their roster. After 2021, he was cast aside by Minnesota and was kind of forced to go to the USL. So there you go.
He was on Minnesota's roster. Oh man.
Minnesota's roster. He actually played 13 games in 2021 with Minnesota.
Ben, how many caps do you think Juan Agudelo has?
I can tell you right now.
USA caps.
USA I'm, caps. Full international. I say I'm looking 15. At his Wikipedia right now.
You say 15?
15.
Harrison, tell him.
28.
28 caps for the US. Wow.
It was a different time, man. It was a different time.
That's with the U.S. men's full team, right?
Yeah, that's not it. That's not youth internationals, right?
Yeah, for the Olympics, he had a couple of matches. U-20s, he had 8 appearances. For the U-17s, he had 16. Like, it's crazy. It is crazy the amount of time that he has had. And like, honestly, I kind of wanted to see how many goals or where he ranked on the all-time goal list for New England. And that just kind of fell off my list. So listeners, if you're out there and you know where Juan Agudelo falls in the list of all-time New England goal scorers, like throw it at me, like Harrison_Crow, like it, hit me with it. I would be interested.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. I think TFC picked him. Like when he came back from Europe, maybe they picked him in like a re-entry draft or something, and then they couldn't find a contract, so he ended up at Miami for their first season. I remember that being a thing.
MLS re-entry draft. That was at yeah.
Was it when he came back from Europe? Am I right?
No, it was fine. He failed to sign with New England after he wasn't old enough to count as a free agent at the time. And so janky MLS,
there's a lost generation.
So you got to get drafted.
Yeah, that generation of players that like earned the free agency now, but didn't quite get it once it was debuted. Yeah, that's rough.
Well, another group of people who were very hyped, but maybe have not lived up to their hype yet. The LA Galaxy. The Galaxy are a 0 expected goal difference team, plus 0.6, basically mid-table. They're plus 4 on their goal difference, which is not great, but they're 18 points from 10 games. So I would expect there's probably some results luck going on there. Of course, we already talked about that they got peppered by LAFC in one of their games. So like, okay, maybe they're actually a little bit better than that. I actually think this team is quite a bit better than that. And they've been somewhat unlucky to have their metrics look how they do. And the reason I say that is their team has been very weird. So they destroy Inter Miami their first game and they draw 1-1. Then they have a bunch of draws in games they probably deserve to win. But then they win a bunch of games where they're winning by one goal. The Seattle game comes to mind where they score right at the beginning of the game. And then they basically get peppered the rest of the game. So I think they are a team who, like, there is enough noise in their data from what has happened so far that give this team another 10 games and we'll have a lot better idea about where they are. But I'm very curious what you gentlemen think.
I, I, I think they're a very good attacking team. I think they're a very poor defensive team. I think that that's kind of already said, but more specifically, I think that it's really weird that they allow, as a possession-based team, they've allowed so many passes inside their attacking half, and not just inside their attacking half, but also specifically passes inside their 18. They, I think, are... I want to say they're in the top third. I want to say they're even higher, but the amount of passes, and we saw this this past weekend with Portland, right? Portland just eviscerated them with movement. Some of the just pulling some of their center backs that just don't have that recovery speed, right? And I think that that's ultimately kind of, I don't want to lay it at like Marky Delgado's feet, because Marky has been really good for them. But he's such a possession. They are missing like that the Brugman type player there that kind of protects that that front back line. Yeah,
I think that's a really astute point. Like, I think Brugman has only played about 500 minutes. He's coming back from a fairly serious knee injury. Like, the drop off from Brugman to Chirillo is like tremendous. Like, Cirillo, if you look at his stat profiles, are like, he vaguely passes the ball a lot and doesn't really ever give it away and does nothing. He doesn't win it.
I thought that was a brilliant move. It's a brilliant move for depth piece, right? He's never going to be like this high, but he was cheap and he's not going to hurt you.
Yeah, it was a not altogether dissimilar move than the one that TFC made for Brandon Cervania. Where, like, they're just a competent eight who doesn't make a lot of money, a competent 8-6 who doesn't make a lot of money and is on a reasonable contract. Like, Cirillo makes 150 grand for another two seasons. Like, you're,
and he's like, what, 23?
Yeah, something like that. So it's not, he's fine. However, if he is starting, he's playing 70% of your minutes.
Yeah.
That's probably suboptimal.
Exactly.
So that's a big one where I would expect there to be some changes. The other is, I think, Jalen Neal, who's been really good last year as a young player, hasn't played at all this year because he's been injured. He made his first appearance against Austin. He played the second half. They've been having to play like Eric Zavaleta, nephew. He's Greg Vanney's nephew, for those of you who are unaware. Playing Zavaleta, who's like just very bad at soccer. They've played Caceres, who's 37 and not that good anymore, a lot. I think sorting out the center back thing will be a big step for them as well.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of they're in a tough spot when it comes to personnel and style, because they are, you know, they're playing the Greg Vanney, spread them out, switch the ball, use the ball to kill them offensively, which is immensely powerful. And we've seen it have immense success with Toronto and with flashes with this LA team still. But that just leaves you so vulnerable when you do cough it up, because you have everyone forward. You have two of your midfield three as sort of more, you have Puig, who is an offensive killer. You have Mark Delgado, who can help retain the ball and help circulate it, but he's not going to be putting in that much defensive work, which means all of that falls on your six. And if your six is 23 and just starting to get his legs under him, that puts a lot of pressure on your center backs, and their center backs are not, I mean, they're good, they're fine, but that's a lot of pressure to be under at the flip of a hat. And I feel like I saw this happen with the Rapids under Robin Fraser playing that similar style. When it falls apart, it falls apart. And I think as they rework their roster into the next year, now that they have such a strong attacking foundation to rely on, I think it's going to get better. But I think it's going to be dicey for the rest of the season. And I'm not sure how much they'd be able to do in the summer to really patch up those holes.
So I think I was just going to say real fast, don't forget Yoshida is also starting there. So,
He's 35. He's not one for the future.
No, for sure. They just need some, like, for this season, for them to be successful, they just need to find somebody they can pair with them. And I think that they've kind of solidified that, right?
Yeah, and Yoshida's solid. But, like, if 80% of your center back minutes are being played by a 35, soon to be 36, and a 37-year-old, like, I think that's not I don't think that's a recipe for center back success. There's a few things that I think are interesting. I think one, I believe they actually do have the like wherewithal to add in the summer. I don't believe what's his name, Peck, whose FB ref name doesn't match his real name. I don't think he's a full DP. I think he's a whatever weird machinations they want. So I think they can do more in the summer. The second thing is that they are like have the weirdest stat profile. They are a top five team in MLS for box touches, box entries, progressive passes, final third touches, all the attacking metrics. And they are a bottom five team in all the same metrics for allowed. And it's so
perfectly balanced as all things should.
Absolutely. I mean, they literally are almost perfectly balanced. So I do think that's one of those things that like, it takes more time to build attacking stuff. Like there used to be, this is a weird throwback, the Stats Bomb podcast, when like Ted and James used to do it, they used to talk about like how manager improvement came about. And they had this like axiom, as it were, that it takes 8 games to see defensive stuff and it takes a season to see attacking stuff. And I kind of wonder if Vanny is just like done the attacking stuff for a year and is like, yeah, we'll figure out the defending later. So I'm very curious to see, like, as time goes on, does the defending stuff get better because the attacking stuff gets better? Like, they are better at rest defense. They are better at setting themselves up to avoid turnovers. They are not playing some of the turnover magnets on their team as much. So I'm curious to see their trajectory, because I think there's actually a lot of scope for them to be really, really good. I mean, we've talked about their midfield before. Like, their midfield is obscene. Like, when everyone is there, like Brugman, Delgado, and Puig is maybe the best midfield in the whole league.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just kind of outrageous for their three different roles, how maxed out their stats are for those specific roles.
Yeah, so there's some interesting things going on. And I think it's also interesting to contrast them with like their midfield don't really turn the ball over that much. Like, even Puig is like, the guy just moves the ball. Mm-hmm. But their wingers and their fullbacks are all like very high turnover players. Like Paintsil and Aude and Peck are all like top 40 turnover guys in the league. Like, they're turning it over in not great spots, like 2, 3, 4.
I will give you that Peck's propensity for turnovers is much too high, but I will tell you, I think he's the difference. Like, he's the third heat. Like, Paintsil was great coming on. He's definitely a great addition. Peck is a different, like, his progressive carries along with Puig is what allows Ricky Puig to kind of have it, it. He just enables, like, he's just connects in this third heat style. I love it. I think it makes Greg Vanney's system work, like the width and everything. I'm a huge fan of Gabriel Peck.
The third heat being like Puig and Paintsil are 1 and 2.
Well, I mean, Jovic, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I think it's like you have like a three-headed dragon running in front of Pooch. So Pooch can pick his pass. Things. Exactly.
They you all have do you three have different things. Amazing. Yeah. All
have,
in their
you
own.
You have
little
your Dejan Jovic, who's basically doing the Wando. He's just occupying the space. He's slipping off center back's shoulders once the ball's in the dangerous spots for cutback. You have Paintsil, who burns in behind and gets in that spot for that cutback, like behind the defenders. And then you have Peck sort of in between, who can pop up in spots, pop up at wide, pop up in the middle, and do that connect, you know, drive through, or, you know, lay it off for Puig again, who can then make that other pass for something opening up. It's really something.
It's pretty incredible that we've been talking about the Galaxy for 11 minutes and have only just mentioned the league XG leader in Dejan Jovic. I think he's a very He's a very interesting player because he has historically put up exceptional XG numbers, even when the team was terrible. And I think one of the interesting things about him is that his numbers aren't that much better with the team being really good. And I think that's probably a good thing, for them at least, because it means there's probably more food to go around. But I'm kind of curious what his like, what's the plan? Because if I'm being honest about Daniel Vujicic, he's very good, but he's like kind of limited. He's 24. He's probably not making that much money in comparison to, he is that weird archetype slash like shape of player who Jovljic could go play for Red Star, or I think he's a Red Star guy. I don't know if he's like Red Star or Partizan and has like a lot allegiances to keep up. But I'm pretty sure like he could just go back to Red Star and make way more money than he makes for the Galaxy. And never get dropped by Serbia. So I'm curious to see like how long can you keep that guy for? Because if they're not, let's say they cool off results-wise. They keep these numbers, but they cool off. How long does that guy want to stick around?
I mean,
I
I think
mean,
it
if you're in
depends.
LA.
Yeah, but he's not, he's Serbian. Does he love the glitz and glamour of LA? Like, I don't know. Maybe he wants
Not
some, maybe he wants some ćevapi.
every Serbian is Nikola
Yeah, well,
Jokic.
yeah, he may, well, yeah, I thought you were going to say not every Serbian is Alexander Katai for a second. which is a very,
That'd be some unfortunate
yeah,
generalize.
that's
Oh man,
a very different
there's a
level.
that guy.
Well,
No one
well,
remembers that guy.
no, so
No one wants to.
part of it also, right, is like Jovic is a U22 and he signed like a 4-year deal when he signed. So he only has a year and a half left on that deal. And presumably at the end of that deal, he's gonna want a DP deal. So
You think he wants a DP deal?
he's the leading the league in XG. Like I would point at Benteke's contract and say, I'm 24, give me that. I would get, I, and by the way, if I was an MLS team,
Benteke's getting the contract he's getting because he's Benteke coming from
because he
Europe.
has, yeah,
No,
because he has the EPL experience.
that's fine. That's fine. I don't disagree. But like if I go pull up, and it's not like he's like way behind his it's not like he's way behind his XG or anything either. I'm pretty sure he's the league leader in goals as well. So like if I'm, and I'm just pulling it up now, that's why I'm like waffling here. But he's not the league leader in goals. He's seventh now, and he is behind his XG.
Yeah, but all right, so but
but no, regardless,
the
if you
argument
look
that I
at
would make is Chicho.
Chicharango's a DP now. They paid like $5 million for him.
Did they pay 5 million? Yeah, I think the
Yes,
majority
the
of the
fee was
money that
six
he's
million.
making, the money that he's making, I think is very minimal. I think the most of it is in the actual purchase. I'd need to go and look at more details. I think he can be bought down. And not only that, but if LA Galaxy or if LAFC wouldn't have moved him, like forced him, kicked him out the door, he probably would have just been content to stay there for $1 million and bang home goals and win trophies. Like, I don't know.
Ar Arango makes 2 million.
Okay. So
2.2 point 2.1 million.
that's just above buying it down.
What I would say is I think it comes down to how Galaxy want to play it, because I think they like what because he's not a DP. I don't know if they want to get rid of Puig or Paintel or Peck. You know what I mean? Like I think they're sort of locked into this. They need those.
Pooj is Max Tam, no? I
You
think.
need is he? I thought he was a DP.
They just signed re-signed him from.
Did they re-sign him?
They extended him because his contract.
Okay. Yeah. 3.3 million now. He was making less. He was making 1.6
But
before.
I think my point is I think they want to keep those positions at those level of spend. So I think they would, based on Jovalich's demands, I think they would probably want to move on from him. What I think is there's probably another MLS team willing to pay him what he wants. That would
Now that comes back to the same question of like, do you want to go live in Kansas City?
I mean, I think if Kansas City is offering you more than Belgrade money,
I think like that's like if you think about the profile of like smaller European league, but best team in that league, like those clubs are usually pretty rich.
This is like the future of the league. You know, it's these players who are great, who are good for maybe not the top eight national teams of the world, but who are pretty good and can definitely start for those, you know, those best teams in those non-top five leagues. That's where this league's going to find its money. That's where it's going to find its best talent.
It's the Giovincos and the Mokars and the like guys who are just sub elite for a quite good country. Like, I think if I were an MLS team, I would pay him DP money and I would not think
twice. I would too.
Like, the guy has like 25 goals in like 35 games or something in MLS, and
the numbers are there.
Yeah, like the underlyings are crazy. Like the guy's super legit and he's 20, he's turning 25. Like you give that guy a 5-year deal at DP money and you don't blink, I don't think.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But who knows what these players want, right? Like I think this is maybe a good time to talk about this. MLS announced that they're changing the roster rules. So now you have the option. You can go 3 full DPs and 3 U22s, or you can go 2 full DPs, 4 U22s, and 2 million in GAM. And I think these two teams actually have like very interesting different paths for that, where U22 signings have mostly not worked for most teams. And Jovalich is a home run of one of those. And we haven't seen any of those players come off of those deals yet. Because U22s only came in 2021, I believe. So I'll be very curious to see how the ones who are successful come off the back of that. Because I think in the eyes of the league, the like plan was that nobody would see the end of the contract. They'd be good and they'd be sold. So I'm very curious to see how they handle that.
Yeah, because if they're good enough to stay, you're not going to be able to pay them. But if they're bad, you're going to send them home. And if they're great, so regardless of the situation, the theory is that they're not staying here in any type of long-term situation.
Well, if they're good enough to stay, you can just DP them. But I think like there's going to be very few U22s who are good enough that you want to keep them, but willing to take kind of the same amount of money, because like the whole point of the U23 is that they're underpaid because the fee doesn't count. And because you can overpay them because they only count as $200,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like,
so they might not be worth 600, but you can get them over on a 600K contract just to get their name on the line.
Exactly. Like Io Akinola gets paid $800,000 a year because TFC didn't want him to leave to PSV for free. And he counts as 200,000 on the cap. But like, if he was to ask for a renegotiation, like if he was to try and renew at the end of this deal, he has been nowhere near an $800,000 player, but that's where the number would start.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an interesting roster.
It is.
Conundrum. And
I'm curious how the future signings for that's going to change too. Like, are we going to even see as big a transfer fees? Like, I think we'll see these players, but I don't think the transfer fees are going to be nearly as big. Like they'll be like 2 million instead of 6 million or something like that.
I cannot express the degree to which I think the two DPs, 4 U22s and 2 million is so much better than 3 and 3.
Yes.
2 million in allocation money
goes so far.
Humongous. Yeah. And like most teams are picking a young guy with their DP anyways, and you can still have Max Tam guys as your third DP, because you just can't have two full DPs. You can still put them in a DP slot. It's like a weird Like, I look at TFC and I'm like, oh my God. Basically, every year since Bradley Elliott or Giovinco, I would have chosen this over a third DP. So I'll be very curious to see how that changes in the future. Any other Galaxy thoughts? Because we are hitting a long episode today.
I've got one, which is so this is inspired by Matt Doyle shouting out how bad the set piece defense for the Galaxy has been specifically. God. So I dove into that a little bit, and it's even more interesting because it's not just set pieces, it's just corners. So they have the worst XG per game allowed from corner kicks in the league at 0.34 XG per game, just from corners. Yikes. The next closest is Montreal at 0.29, which is like 15% less. Like, it's just ridiculous how much worse they are at corners than every other team of the league. And if they can fix that, that might be all they need.
If Harrison has a legitimate reason to put Greg Vanney 11th, that is it. His TFC teams were also dreadful at defending corners.
If I have any reason, it's because Greg Vanney, he can only coach one way, but still.
Yeah, and that way won him an MLS Cup over Seattle with the greatest team of all time. Alrighty. Ben, how's our draft looking? I saw a chart today that I did not particularly like the look of, so I would demand a recount.
The count is going on yet for a good three-fourths of the season, so it's not quite over. But unfortunately, I am far in the lead with 4.2 goals plus above average for my roster. Kieran, you were at 1.5, and Harrison has dipped down to 1.3.
I like how you're upset, but my team actually went in the negative this week. Like, we took a full step back. Like,
really? No. Harrison lost a full goal at it this week.
Wait, was it a poor Andre Blake performance? Is that what happened?
I must have been. I need to do better at checking the actual players over time. But I mean, we're at the point where between the three of us, we've picked six players that are doing anything. Two each. The rest of them are basically negligible or like zero. Listen, or just a complete liability.
For context, Christian Benteke and Thiago Almada are at plus four goals added above average. Yep. I, as a team, am at plus 1.5. So, friends, you can do the math on that one. Yeah, well, Ben, I need your eyes peeled for hanging chads to get me back into it. We got trivia. Are you ready, gentlemen?
God,
let's do it.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It's a good week. It's a good week. It does not require any specialized knowledge. I think you're gonna enjoy this one. Ben, why don't you kick us off? 1 to 6, as always, there is an LAFC and Galaxy theme to this one. 1 to 6, which one do you want?
Let's go 6.
Alrighty. LAFC have a formal falconry program. Before each game, they fly falcons around the stadium. And there's three of them, and they're all named after famous Los Angeles streets. Which of the following falcons is not a real name? Is not a real falcon at BMO Stadium. A, Ollie for Olvera Street. B, Fig for Figueroa Street. C, Holly for Hollywood Boulevard. Or D, Mel for Melrose Avenue.
Oh, man.
So we've got Ollie, Fig, Holly, and Mel.
I think Ollie and Fig are legit. I think it's between Holly and Mel. I'm going to say Mel is fake.
That is unfortunate, Ben. Mel is not fake. Harrison, would you like to steal?
Yeah, so I was thinking, you know, who was it from LA Galaxy that ended up starring in Melrose Place? Wasn't it Andrew?
I have no idea. I have no Andrew idea Shue. What was you're that, referring to. Is that
the individual? Anyways, so I'm going to guess Holly.
And you would be correct. There is no Holly. There is Ollie, Fig, and Mel, though. As if I know LA streets other than Hollywood Boulevard. Harrison, you're up 1-0. You can take a commanding 3-0 lead with the next question. 1 to 5. What do you want?
4.
Number 4. Opened in 2003, the Galaxy play in what is now known as Dignity Health Sports Park. Can you name both of the prior sponsor names for the stadium?
Oh my goodness. Allianz Field was one of them. I don't remember the last one.
Fire a guess off.
Whatever hot triple X fans. I don't know. Only fans.
Only fans arena. Well, no, both of those are not correct. Ben, would you like to steal?
I thought for sure their first year was all.
No, the original name is the Home Depot Center. That one I remember.
That is one of them. And can you remember the other?
Oh, what's the next? It was the one after Home Depot Center.
There have only been two, so that is absolutely correct.
Before, I've heard it so many times. Like, I'm pretty sure it was not the Home Depot Center when the Galaxy went on their cup run. Oh God, I'll take the 1 point that I got and run with it.
I'll allow you your one point.
Can I guess?
Sure, you can guess if you
StubHub.
It is StubHub.
It was StubHub. Damn it.
Yeah, Home Depot and StubHub. I was convinced when I found this question that at one point it had been called Herbalife Arena, but I guess not.
Yeah, so that's just what I was. That's what I was going for was the Herbalife. That's yeah, kind of what I was thinking as well, and I couldn't think of Herbalife. So
I guess that was their shirt sponsor. Yep. 1-1, Ben, you're back up. What do you want?
That was 2-1.
No, StubHub didn't count. That didn't count.
Okay.
No.
All right, 1-1. Let's do 2. Keep it even.
Oh, here's a good one. Alrighty, LAFC have had a player win the Golden Boot 3 times. Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, Denny Buonga. Only one other team has won it 3 times. For 2 points, name that team. I will also give you a bonus point if you can name both players who won it the 3 combined times. So 2 points for the team, 1 point if you can get the 2 players. Pretty big hint here. One player won it twice. There's not a lot of those.
No. Oh, man. Harrison knows this.
Do you know it, Harrison?
I think I do.
I'm going to guess.
The pressure's on.
I'm going to guess Galaxy, and I think it's Robbie Keane and Donovan.
That is incorrect.
No.
Oh, that's exact. Those were the exact 2 names that I had.
I was like, that seems too easy. I feel like it's like DC United and it's going to be names I'm not going to guess.
No, that is, I'm going to double check, but I believe the Galaxy have only won it twice. Yeah, Landon Donovan. They've only won it once, Landon Donovan, 1 time.
Oh, okay.
For sure, Robbie.
I swear Robbie Keane had a golden boot, but okay.
All right, Harrison, do you have a steal on the tip of your brain?
Let's see. The only other team that I would think of would be the San Jose Earthquakes.
It's a good guess. Wanda won it twice. Maybe they had a third one slipped in there. Unfortunately, they do not. Another good guess would have been the Red Bulls. Bradley Wright Phillips won it twice. But the answer is New England Revolution. Taylor Twellman times 2 and Pat Noonan. Pat Noonan split it with Amado Guevara in 2004 when the Golden Boot used to be a point system where it was two points for a goal, 1 point for an assist.
Interesting.
So him and Amado Guevara both had 30 points that year. All right, no points for anybody. Harrison, you're back up. What do you want, 1, 3, or 5?
Go Trace.
All righty, question number 3. I will preface this with the question may be wrong, but I researched for 45 minutes, so I'm pretty confident, but if I'm wrong, it's not my fault.
Let's go.
U22 initiative players have very much been a mixed bag for MLS teams. Who was the first ever U22 player signing? And the hint is perhaps they were the most apt definition of mixed bag. First ever U22 player.
I'm guessing he's from LAFC. He's LAFC's midfielder. I can't remember the name though. It's not Tuesta. It was the other one.
You're thinking about the Portuguese guy, Horta?
Yes. Yeah,
Horta.
yeah.
Horta was a DP, but
Oh, was he? Okay.
But it is not the answer. Ben, do you have a steal?
So this would have been like 2021.
They signed
Definition of a
January.
mixed bag in
They
January.
They signed before the rule was announced. And it was in the news articles at the time saying this player has been signed under a new rule that has not been announced yet.
This is ringing so many bells, but it's just not coming to me. Was it Pooj?
It was not Pooj. Pooj joined April 2022, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to pass it around for another one. The hint I'm going to give you is that he was loaned from his team because they would have broken roster rules on U22 spots at one point. I believe he's back now, but at one point.
I'm going to lightning round in. Was this Mitrovic with NYCFC?
No, it was Franco Ibarra. He was traded to TFC on loan.
Oh, yeah.
From Atlanta.
From Atlanta because they ran out of roster spots for him. And he was very upset about it. Alrighty, right. We're still sitting at 1-1.
Soccer we've got match.
Question 2, question 5. Ben, you're up.
Oh man, let's do one. Cop out.
Yes, yeah, one, not five, not two. Sorry. Three players have played for both the Galaxy and LAFC. One current, so plays for one of the two clubs right now, and two former. You get 1 point for each of them. However, once you get one wrong, I will stop you.
That would be McCarthy. That's the active
that's the,
one.
That's the current one. 2-1 to Ben. There's two others. Both former.
Former players that were for both.
I will say one is very gettable and one I had to look him up.
One is very gettable. Oh, gosh. Latif Blessing? I don't know.
It's a good guess, but not correct. Harrison, can you steal? There's 2 points on the board. You could take a lead if you know your deep cut depth fullbacks.
Oh, was that Raheem Edwards?
There's one. That wasn't the deep cut one. 2-2. There is the deepest of cuts
the
left remaining.
The deepest of cuts.
I'm not going to let you stew too long because I think there's no
yeah,
chance.
Yeah, dead air.
It's not. It's
dead air for sure.
Nico Hämäläinen. Who came on loan from QPR to LAFC, then went back to England, and then came on loan to the LA Galaxy a few years later.
I don't even remember that, dude.
Like I said, I had to look him up. All right, last question. Harrison, this is your question. It's 2-2. The Galaxy have four names on their Ring of Honor in the stadium, okay? Three belong to legendary players, Mauricio Cienfuegos, David Beckham, Landon Donovan. The fourth belongs to a non-playing member of staff, a former GM so successful that the current MLS Executive of the Year award is named after him, before sadly passing away mid-flight on the way back from a CCL tie versus Saprissa. Who is he? I had no idea this happened. I was shocked to look this up.
Goodness gracious. I think he's the guy that signed, I'm sure. No, because that was Alexi Lawless. I have no idea. I am not sure.
Ben, can you steal? He died in 2006 on the way back. Heart attack on a plane.
There's no way I'm going to know this. Pass.
Well, his name's Doug Hamilton. He won Executive of the Year 3 times in a row and then died, and then they immediately named Executive of the Year after him. We can't end on a 2-2 tiebreaker.
Because it's not American.
No.
Maybe it's the end of the world or something.
We don't tie.
We go right to penalties now, all right?
Yeah, we don't tie in this country. So here's what we're going to do. The league leader in progressive passes is the Columbus Crew. Second is the Galaxy. We'll keep it Galaxy themed. To the closest number, I want you to write in the chat how many progressive passes the Galaxy have. And we'll do a closest draw.
Progressive passes.
Total
using...
progressive passes 4.
What's the source we're using here?
I'm using FB Ref because it's what I've got open.
Sounds good. I just wanted to double check.
We'll give you a 3-2-1 to hit enter in the chat. This is not good audio content, but It's the best tiebreaker I've got.
All right, I'm ready to put something in the chat.
Harrison, are you ready?
Yeah. So behind the a number of the next team behind the LA Galaxy?
No. How many progressive passes do the Galaxy have? That's it. That's the whole question.
Okay, cool.
Closest wins.
All right, cool.
Ready? Three, two, one. Go. Okay, I got to do some math because you're both not close.
And not probably the opposite direction.
Yes, yeah, it's in the middle of you.
What's the number?
474. So I think Ben edges it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's
Ben way. Ben's guess was 225. Harrison guessed 950.
I was thinking attacking passes.
That would be a very small number of passes, I think. Anyways, that wraps us up for the day. Ben is triumphant again. Harrison, his penalty clanks off the post. That's all from us. Sorry, we went a little bit long today. So I will leave you with, if you like the show, if you like the website, you want to support the content, check out our Patreon Discord. There's one tier. It's $5 a month. You go into the Discord. People talk about lots of cool stuff in there. There's a referee in there. So people always bug him with refereeing decisions, which is really fun. But it helps out the site, pays for servers. It's expensive to keep this stuff running. And check out Backheeled. Again, Backheeled, they're putting up awesome coverage of all of the American soccer around. And they even let this Canadian get there sometimes too. So that's all from us. I'll leave you with the lyrical stylings of some AI music and enjoy the soccer.
I feel full, especially as both were. Sign his team, players in the middle of the season. Who can only make $1.6 million? It takes some believing in the center, proven guilty, of course. But they'll make $38 million before tax paid for Real Madrid.
Our integrity and how we operate as a club is like we take that incredibly seriously. I personally take that seriously. Larry as our co-president takes that seriously. Our CFO, our owners, we take that incredibly seriously. So any implication that we're doing anything other than what is fully above board is a completely misguided representation that is frankly insulting and disrespectful to the player, to the club, and to the league. Actually.
That we are doing anything other than what is fully above board is a completely misguided representation that